Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Office Mate by Katie Ashley. Narrated by Stephanie Wiles and Brandon Utah. Chapter 1. Isabel. There are some days that are destined to change your life. Ones when you're old and gray, you'll look back on as the day when everything became different. The day when your ship finally came in. If you're a type A extreme planner like me, you're lucky enough to know when and where fate is going to smile on you. Therefore, you're able to prepare for the enormity of the moment. You've thought out every scenario and have a plan of action for each and every possibility to ensure you make the most of your day. The day of my own personal life changer had arrived. Everything I'd been working for professionally converged on this moment. The years spent slaving over textbooks and writing countless essays while getting my undergrad and MBA. The 16-hour workdays after landing my job. The weekends spent in the office away from family and friends. It all came down to this promotion. The day I, at just 29, would be elevated to a vice president in investment banking at the Callahan Corporation. Sorry, I had to add that part. It probably sounds pretentious, or like I'm bragging. Trust me, I hate when people do that. Like, it's a serious pet peeve. It's just I've been through a hell of a lot to get where I am. I was the first member of my family to graduate college, let alone get a graduate degree. As a kid who grew up on free lunches and thrift store clothes, the odds were stacked against me from the start. A lot was made harder simply because I possessed a vagina. I'll be forever grateful to the women before me who shattered the corporate glass ceiling. The thing is, even in 2018, the shards from that glass can still cut you. Women have to work harder to get where they are. And for someone like me who didn't come from a prestigious family with connections, I had to do even more. Back home in my small backwoods town of Dawsonville, Georgia, my family wasn't part of society. If you want a small glimpse into my childhood, watch Sweet Home Alabama. While my father didn't do the Civil War reenactments, I did grow up in a double-wide trailer. And my mom did shove me into every imaginable pageant to pad my scholarship fund to get me the hell out of town. She wanted me to have all the opportunities in life she hadn't. It's why, when I was 8, she went to battle with the administration at my elementary school to allow me to skip a grade. Little girls who lived in trailers weren't always the first ones on the list for special testing and advancement. I was grateful I'd inherited her intelligence and tenacity, along with her auburn hair and blue eyes. The junk-in-the-trunk booty she'd graced me with wasn't exactly on my preferred trait list, but such was life. Thinking of my mom caused a wave of homesickness to wash over me. She was 1,000 miles and what seemed like a lifetime away. When I was just 20 years old, I'd traded the Peach State for the Big Apple. After transferring to Columbia, I'd finished my undergrad before entering the accelerated MBA program. While my dad had harbored hopes I might come back to Georgia and find work in Atlanta, I'd taken a job with the company where I'd interned, the Callahan Corporation. I made it home for Sunday dinner at least once a month, even though my parents and sister teasingly called me a Yankee. Speaking of work, I eyed my phone. It was 5 minutes until my alarm went off. In spite of my scheduled wake-up time not having come yet, I'd already been awake for an hour. Staring up at the ceiling, I'd gone over in my mind exactly what I planned to say when the job was formally offered to me. My own version of an Academy Award acceptance speech. I wanted to appear humble, yet at the same time highlight the reasons I'd been chosen. Remember how I said I hate bragging? Anyway, I'd even gone so far as to practice it in front of the mirror the previous night, to analyze not just my word choices, but also my facial expressions. It's probably right about now you're thinking I'm a wee bit of a perfectionist. The phrase control freak might be flashing like neon in your mind. And trust me, I get it. In fact, I embrace my perfectionist side. Without that essential, yet equally annoying quality, I wouldn't be where I am today. With a pep in my step I didn't usually possess in the mornings, I threw back the covers and hopped out of bed. My dog, Danny, popped one eye open and gave me a disapproving look for disturbing her sleep. Once I got into the bathroom, I flipped on my iHome. Instead of an upbeat pop tune or a hardcore rap beat filling the room, it was the latest stock market updates from Bloomberg Radio. Perfectionist, remember? I like to get a feel for the markets first thing. After showering, I took extra time on my hair and makeup. Most days, I went for a look that was natural but still utilized all the tools in my arsenal, including eyeliner, mascara, and lipstick. Since I was knocking on 30's door, I couldn't quite get away with what I had in my early 20s. Once I was satisfied with my makeup, I tied my long hair into a trendy twist at the base of my neck. I snickered at the thought that I could pull off a sexy librarian look. Of course, I'd tossed my glasses years ago after getting LASIK. Now that I was finished in the bathroom, I headed back into my bedroom to get dressed. I slipped into a cream-colored silk shirt and a navy pinstripe skirt that hit just at my knee. And then I slid on my matching suit jacket. As I straightened the lapels, I nodded at my reflection in the mirror. I threw a glance at Danny over my shoulder. "What you think, girl? Does Mommy look like a vice president?" Danny's response came in the form of a yawn. "I'll take that as a yes," I replied as I walked over to the bed. "You have fun today at doggy daycare." Yes, I'm not ashamed to admit I send my dog to daycare. It was the only way a dog as large as Danny could stay sane in the city and not devour my furniture. Thankfully for me and for Danny, they had pickup and drop-off service. When I opened my bedroom door, a wave of confetti blasted me in the face. "Happy promotion day!" my roommate and best friend, Mila, cried out enthusiastically. Her dog, Drogo, barked in congratulations, which instantly got Danny going. Drogo and Danny were litter mates Mila and I had adopted through the rescue where we volunteered. Well, it was more like Mila did the hands-on work, while I helped out financially. While my job came with many blessings, the one curse was that it didn't leave me a lot of free time. I muttered as I was momentarily blinded by the multicolored balm that coated my eyelashes and mouth. As soon as I could see and breathe again, I grinned at Mila. "Oh my God, you are too much." "But you love me anyway," she countered. "More than you could ever know," I replied before reaching out to hug her. After squeezing her tight, I pulled away to eye her curiously. "What in the world are you doing up this early?" As the chief makeup artist at the Palace Theater on Broadway, Mila's late nights meant she was always still snoozing when I left for work. From the outside, most people would wonder how an investment banker and a makeup artist were best friends. I'd met Mila when I first came to New York to attend Columbia. While we had attended different schools in the daytime, we'd waited tables in the same restaurant at night. Though we didn't share similar professions, our hearts were on the same wavelength. We had both traded small-town life for the big city. We both had a soft spot for animals, and we both enjoyed the same movies and television. 2 years before, when I'd finally felt financially stable enough to buy a decent apartment in the financial district, Mila had been going through a nasty divorce and needed a place to live. Once she moved in, she never moved out. even though it was a longer commute for her over to Times Square. With her brown eyes sparkling, Mila replied, "I knew today was a big day, so I decided to get up early." "Aw, you really are too much, and I thank you." After spinning around, I asked, "How do I look?" "Like corporate Barbie," I snorted. "Seriously?" Mila nodded. "Totally. Slap you in a box and little girls everywhere would be inspired to be all they can be." "Isn't that the Army's slogan?" She waved her hand dismissively. "Whatever, it still works. Do I really look that much different than I usually do?" Eyeing me thoughtfully, Mila replied, "I think it's the severity of the twist that sets everything off. You're more of a ponytail girl." "If I'd known you were up, I would have asked you to do it." "Yeah, but then I would have given you some kind of ethereal flair with some side braiding like Daenerys Targaryen." One thing Mila and I had in common was our adoration for Game of Thrones. Although our schedules never worked out to watch it together, we always met for lunch on Mondays to chat about the show. I drew in a deep breath while debating whether to wipe my already sweaty palms on my skirt. "I will be channeling my inner Daenerys today for sure." Placing her hands on my shoulders, Mila smiled. "You've got this in the bag, girl. No need to unleash the dragons." With a laugh, I replied, "Okay, I'll remember that. Want me to meet you for a celebratory lunch today? I would love that. I'll make sure I'm ready to roll by noon." "Sounds good. I'll text you when I'm about to leave." "Mad Dog, so we can toast with our favorite margaritas?" Tapping my chin thoughtfully, I replied, "You think a vice president can get away with one margarita on her lunch break?" "Hell yeah, she can," Mila replied with a grin. I returned her smile. "Then Mad Dog and beans it is." Mila dropped her hands from my shoulders. "Now go get 'em, Tiger." "Yes, ma'am," I replied with a salute. "As you head off to take the corporate world by storm, I'm going back to bed." I grinned as I pulled on my coat. "I don't blame you. Thanks for getting up for me." She yawned.
"It was nothing."
After throwing the strap of my leather laptop bag across my shoulder, I picked up my keys and purse. "See you later." Craning my neck, I called, "Bye, Danny." This time she woofed in acknowledgement. With a quick wave to Mila, I headed out the door. I chose to live in the financial district so I could be close to work, and I couldn't have been happier with my decision. Being just 4 blocks from the office really came in handy with my crazy late-night working hours. "Good morning, Lloyd," I said to the elderly doorman who had become a friend over the last 2 years.
"Good morning, Sass," he replied with his usual smile.
He'd given me the nickname shortly after I moved in, a subtle nod to my southern sassiness, as he called it.
"Today's the day, huh?"
"Excuse me?" He winked.
"Mila was telling me about your promotion when she came out earlier to get coffee."
Leave it to Mila to pre-spill the beans to Lloyd. "Well, I haven't officially gotten the promotion yet, but it looks very promising."
"I'm sure you've got it in the bag."
"Thanks, Lloyd. I appreciate that."
"You'll have to tell me all about it tomorrow."
"I promise." I then started hustling down the street. I can imagine what you're thinking right about now. Wasn't I counting my chickens before they hatched by celebrating a job that wasn't officially mine? Okay, so maybe you weren't going for a chicken-specific analogy. That was a favorite of my mom's, and considering I grew up with chickens littering the yard, it wasn't too far-fetched. Anyway, here's why I had reason to put the cart before the horse. Another one of my mom's analogies. One of the vice presidents had just retired, and while it usually took quite a few years to get promoted from associate to vice president, I had shown the most productivity and growth, so it was pretty much a given I would take the open position. For the last week, My boss had been preparing me to receive the news of a promotion. As a creature of habit, I stopped for an overpriced latte at one of the food trucks outside the building. While I could have just waited 5 minutes and gotten a free coffee inside, I like to hit the ground running once I stepped into my office. Just as I rushed forward to head into the building, a wall of muscled flesh plowed into me. The momentum sent the cup of steaming hot espresso and steam milk crashing against my chest, and the scorching liquid sloshed out, cascading over my blouse and seeping through the light fabric to burn my skin. Fuck! I screamed as the fiery trail singed my skin.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
A deep male voice boomed above me. When I jerked my head up to glare at him, the raging inferno of second or third degree burns on my boobs were momentarily forgotten in light of the sheer perfection that met my eyes. An Armani-wearing Adonis stood before me, and with his towering height, bulging muscles, and chiseled features, he appeared to have just taken flight off Mount Olympus, a true god among men. He certainly was a sight for sore eyes. You didn't get a lot of panty-melting investment bankers on my floor. And if you found an impossibly built hottie with a panty-dropping smile, he was often, unfortunately, interested in dropping briefs rather than panties. Hence the age-old adage about all the good ones being gay. The reprieve from my pain was short-lived. When I came back to reality, huffing and puffing in agony, the Adonis said,
I didn't even see you.
While I might be slightly vertically challenged, how in the hell could you possibly miss me? I demanded, fanning my stinging chest.
My head was somewhere else.
Like up your ass? He had the gall to chuckle.
Yeah, pretty much.
With the pain subsiding slightly, I surveyed the aesthetic damage to my blouse. Brown, blotchy stains streaked down my top, causing me to groan. Shit, I'm a wreck.
Here, let me help.
He reached for the crisp white handkerchief in his suit pocket. But instead of handing it to me for cleanup duty, he proceeded to reach out and run his hands all over my chest. While my traitorous nipples had the audacity to harden at the attention. Red flashed before my eyes, causing my right fist to ball at my side. The next thing I knew, I was executing an epic right hook to his gorgeous face. As my knuckle connected with his nose, the dream of my perfect day was shattered.
Chapter 2. Thorn. My breath came in rushed pants as my feet pounded along the pavement. The brutally cold February air burned my lungs, making it hard to take a deep breath. It was quite a difference from the desert heat I'd grown accustomed to during the last year of my deployment, not to mention the urban scenery currently surrounding me. As I sprinted down the pre-dawn Manhattan sidewalks, the city that allegedly never slept slowly came alive. After my alarm had woken me at 6, I'd lumbered out of bed. Although I'd been stateside for 3 weeks, my body still clung to Afghanistan time, which was 8 hours ahead of New York. I hoped like hell that I could shake my wonky sleep patterns soon. Flicking the light on in the closet, I bypassed my comfort clothes, aka my camis. Instead, I donned my Under Armour winterized running gear. While I could have been racking up my miles on the treadmill in my home gym, I preferred being outside. It was another throwback to my time in the Army, and it made me feel a little less displaced. If I were honest, it was more of a necessity than a preference. The more daylight hours I spent inside, the more restless I became. An ache reverberated through my chest, but this time it wasn't from the elements. Rather, it was from the pain of losing the thing that defined me. From the time I was a kid, there was nothing else in the world I wanted to be other than a soldier. I'd mastered a salute before I was out of diapers, and I'd relished watching war movies and playing Call of Duty. While some kids were scared straight by the threat of military school, I couldn't wait to enroll at West Point. More than anything, I wanted to follow in my father's footsteps. But now, all of that was over. Glancing over my shoulder, I shouted, "I know you're back there! Quit being a pansy ass and catch up!" My Secret Service agent, Ty, hustled up to my side.
"You've got to stop this, Thorne. You know you're not supposed to go out in public without me,"
he huffed, due to a combination of exertion and indignation. I shot him a look. "Do you honestly think some disenfranchised voter who hates my dad's policies is going to be waiting to take me out on my 6 a.m. jog?" Ty grunted.
"You never know. Stranger things have happened."
"Bullshit." I seemed to be getting a lot of mileage out of that word lately. I'd said the exact same thing to my father after he was elected president, and I was issued a Secret Service agent upon my return to the States. I could understand the young children of presidents having agents, and I was even happy to hear my college-aged sister, Caroline, would have armed supervision to prevent some douchebag taking advantage of her. But the president's adult children? It was a little ridiculous, not to mention completely demeaning for someone like me. Considering I'd spent my adult life protecting others, there was no way in hell I was going to agree to having my every move shadowed. It was bad enough I'd had to leave my military career as a result of my father's presidency. But now I was being emasculated even further. While I might have been forced to leave my post and my fellow servicemen and women, I put my foot down on who was going to be protecting me. I wasn't going to accept some hotshot who had been through the minimal 28-week Secret Service training program in Georgia and D.C. No, I wanted a seasoned military man. When it came down to it, I hadn't just demanded a military man who had fought in combat and knew what a soldier experienced mentally and physically. I demanded Ty. Ty Fraser was a half-Brit, half-Scot, who had grown up in London's East End, or, as he loved to refer to it, the dodgy part. Not only had he been a member of the Rifles Regiment in the British Army, he'd trained and worked for the elite Blackstone Security Agency in London. For the past couple of years, Ty had been the personal bodyguard for my younger brother, Barrett. Their working relationship had actually started as a personal one. They'd become friends when Ty had first moved to New York from London. That relationship was why I imagined Barrett being pissed at me for requesting Ty. But surprisingly, he'd given me the green light.
"Would you just get off my dick and let me do my job?"
Ty questioned.
"Fine, I'll try," I grumbled.
"Thank you."
We ran the rest of the 5 miles in silence. That was another thing I admired about Ty, his integrity. Even though he was a family friend and could have taken advantage of that to screw off, he always had his head in the game. Not to mention, he took great offense when he wasn't able to do his job as thoroughly as he preferred. While I focused on the run, I knew his senses were on high alert for any danger that might pop up. If, God forbid, some nut job actually tried to hurt me, there wasn't a doubt in my mind that Ty would give his life for mine. For that very reason, I really needed to stop being a prick about him protecting me. Truthfully, I needed to stop being a prick to basically everyone. I still felt so much anger and resentment about being forced to give up my military career. You would have thought after what I'd seen in life, coupled with my age, I would be better equipped to handle my emotions, but I wasn't. I seemed hell-bent on the childish mentality of making everyone around me as miserable as I was. As I neared my apartment building, my right leg, which had been aching for the last 2 miles, began screaming in agony. At what must have been my anguished expression, Ty asked,
"War wounds giving you trouble?"
I nodded. 5 months before, a convoy I was leading had come under enemy fire, before a set of roadside bombs exploded all around us. Bastards took out two of my men, while I ended up with a leg full of shrapnel. The head surgeon at Landstuhl in Germany told me if one of the pieces had hit just an inch higher, it would have gotten my femoral artery, and I would have bled to death. While a soldier stares down the grim reaper every day he or she is in battle, it was sobering to hear just how close I'd come, not to mention how precariously close it had come to taking off my dick. Thankfully, the wounds had healed quickly, and I was allowed back in the field a week later. But my stay in Afghanistan was short-lived. 2 months later, my dad was elected president. While I was home for the inauguration, Dad had taken me aside. 6 weeks had passed since then, and the day was still so fresh in my mind.
"I'm glad to have you home, son."
I'd returned his smile. "It's good being home. Of course, I'm also anxious to get back to the field and finish out this deployment." Dad's expression had saddened.
"Since I was elected, the Department of Defense has made me aware of security concerns. Their latest intel is very troubling."
I'd furrowed my brows at him. "Is my unit facing increasing danger?" He'd nodded.
"But not because of any growing factions."
"I don't think I understand."
"They're in danger because of you."
"Me?"
"You're the president's son, Thorn. A trophy to be won and exploited for political gain. As we speak, forces are working double time to locate you."
Dad had shaken his head.
"I can't afford the risk."
"But I took an oath to serve and protect this country. Not to mention to lead my men and women. I'm sorry, but I refuse to back down just because my life is in slightly more danger than it was before you became president."
"It's simply unprecedented to have a sitting president's child in combat."
"What about Prince Harry? He was able to secretly lead his unit on combat missions when he was in service," I challenged.
"Harry was the third in line to the throne, and he wasn't the prime minister's son."
"He still would have been a prize to be won, as you called it."
"Don't you see? It's not just about you. Our enemies will do whatever it takes to get to you. They couldn't care less about the collateral damage that stands in their way."
It was those words that had changed everything for me. When it came to my own life, I was willing to let the chips fall where they may, but I would never, ever bring undue risk to my men and women. "So that's it. I just walk away and never go back?" Dad had given me an apologetic smile.
"I'm so very sorry, son. I never imagined it would come to this. We will arrange for you to go back and speak with your unit."
I'd thrown my hands up in frustration. "And then what? I mean, what the fuck am I supposed to do with my life?"
"You're Ivy League educated, intelligent, and highly capable. We'll find you a job within the company until you decide what it is you want to do."
The company he was referring to was the Callahan Corporation, a financial conglomerate that had been started by my grandfather, James Thornton Callahan. Dad, or James Thornton Callahan II, had worked there full-time until he'd won his first senatorial race. After that, he'd worked as a consultant when the Senate wasn't in session. It had been expected that I, James Thornton Callahan III, a.k.a. Thorn, would work there as well. At least it had been until I'd expressed interest in a military career. When I hadn't appeared convinced, Dad had said,
"It won't be forever, Thorn. I'm only guaranteed the next 4 years."
4 years might as well have been 40. I couldn't see 4 months into a future that didn't involve the military. Not to mention not being able to recall any officers who had come back from the civilian life.
"Thorn?"
Ty's voice brought me out of my thoughts and back to the present. Our run had ended outside the entrance to the Park Avenue apartment building where I'd been living the last 3 weeks. Although my parents considered Virginia home, they'd kept the apartment since I was a kid. with its marble floors, crystal chandeliers, and oil paintings. It was a little highbrow.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?